Well, Governor Wolf, let me tell you, between now and November 6th, you better put a catcher's mask on your face, because I'm going to stomp all over your face with golf spikes, because I'm going to win this for the state of Pennsylvania, and we're throwing you out of office, because you know what? I'm sick and tired of your negative ads.
Yes, there's our own little baby Trump. How cute. I still love the video of him standing on the side of the road yelling at a billboard. And as I've said, look, you know, at the end of the day, he's a little Trump wannabe, without the personality, without the charisma, and certainly without the media skills. And thank goodness for that. And with Election Day just a couple of days away, the hope is that everyone's getting ready to march to the polls and start throwing some people out of office. And here to share some thoughts on, you know, why we need to get out and vote on Tuesday, November 6th, I've asked our good friend Ken Mash to come talk with us. He's the president of APSCoF, the Faculty and Professors Union here in Pennsylvania. Ken, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, Rick. It's great to be on. Thanks.
So let's start off with baby Trump. What did you think of the golf spikes? What did you think of that comment?
I just thought it was incredible. You know, I don't put anything past him. Those of us who have interacted with him kind of expect some of that behavior, but he really went over the top. I think he's hurt himself now.
Yeah, I think he's devolved into just plain crazy. I mean, I've always known he was off on the fringe. This has been wow. And thank goodness, because his policies, his agenda would have been horrible for this Commonwealth.
Oh, no, it would have been like Wisconsin for those of us who are in unions. There's a good sense among us that he would have done away with the right of public sector workers to unionize if he had the opportunity to. So, I think if we're going to learn anything from 2016, it's take nothing for granted and not even take that election for granted. I don't know about others, but I just can't take another ring in this circus that would exist if he was the governor.
Now, here's the thing. I mean, we're coming up just days away from election. And, you know, what's interesting to me is there are stories out there about, you know, why should we vote? In fact, there was one in New York Magazine, talking about millennials and, you know why they're not voting. And you go, I don't know how you can look at where we are as a country and all of the horrible tragedy that's surrounding us and not be going, I cannot wait to vote to vote some of these bums out. I just don't understand it, Ken.
Well, I'm just concerned that people are getting used to this, that this is somehow the norm, that they've forgotten. And I've even told my kids, look, maybe you've forgotten, but there was a time when you could go 2 weeks without hearing from the president of the United States at all. And when you did hear from the president, it was about something important, not something crazy.
No, and you look, you know, when the shooting happened over the weekend, and this is, you know, to kind of highlight your point about our kids being kind of just desensitized. I was talking to my kids. I got a 16-year-old, and a 12-year-old, and a 10-year-old, and they were kind of like, there was no emotion whatsoever. They're like, another weekend, another shooting. That's normal. What's different about that?
Well, you know, I was in Pittsburgh yesterday, and you could really feel it throughout the entire city what it's meant here. And it's really just troubling. And, you know, we have a president who, you know, I think the best case scenario is you could argue that he's just ignorant of history, ignorance of the import of the words that he uses. And that's the best case scenario. I don't happen to believe that. I think he does know what he's saying. And when he throws around terms like I'm a nationalist, or he makes references to globalism, or people in his crowd start shouting about George Soros, they start to understand that those are just dog whistles that have been associated with anti-Semitism for, you know, generations and generations and generations. And he's just, you know, playing with fire, and unfortunately other people are getting burned.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, and I had some people tell me, well, you know, it's not Donald Trump's fault that this crazy guy went off and, you know, shot people in that synagogue. It's not Donald Trump's fault that, you know, the kid went off in the school and shot a bunch of people. It's not Donald Trump's fault that, you know, the guy in the van with the hate mobile sent all those bombs around. Not his fault. It's not his fault at all.
Well, he didn't pull the trigger. right? He didn't send the bomb. That much is absolutely true. But there's a reason why presidents don't engage, are normally very careful about the words that they use, because they have some appreciation that it's more than just about them and whatever is on their mind at a particular moment. But in fact, what a president says has ramifications. And, you know, maybe he has no responsibility whatsoever for it. But why should it even be a thought in our head that the president of the United States might somehow be attached to these atrocities?
It's a good point. Now, yesterday, you know, as you pointed out, the president was in Pittsburgh. Did he belong there? I personally don't believe he should have been there. I think he should have let the area, you know, let them grieve, let the families, you know, bury the victims, and allow, you know, some bit of healing instead of, you know, bringing what is a sideshow and a diversion, a division, bringing that into the middle. I just don't think it was the right time or place.
Yeah, I think when the mayor makes a very rational argument, which he did, and said, look, when the president comes to a city, there's a lot of responsibility on that city to provide local security. But at the same time, we're burying our people. And given the nature of what happened, we have to provide security for that first and foremost. That deserves respect. And it's upsetting that he couldn't listen and maybe have postponed this for a few days.
Yeah, you know, I know you're in Pittsburgh, and any response from the people around you on his visit, anyone in your circle happy that he's there?
Oh, no, you just get a lot of eye rolls, and, you know, people really just wish he wasn't here, is my impression.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a hard thing. My daughter lives in Squirrel Hill, and, you know, that community's really been rocked. And I think they would just like to settle and spread love in the community and not have any sideshows and distractions.
Yeah, there was an interesting story that I don't remember the newspaper, but it was the doctor who runs the hospital where they took the guy who did the shooting, who was shot. And, you know, they was talking about, you know, the Jewish doctors and nurses that took care of him. And, you know, and this doctor who runs this hospital going and talking with him. And it just seemed to me that, you know, I don't know that I could do it. I guess let me start with that. I don't know that I could do it, but it does show some bit of faith. It does show some bit of humanity, I guess.
Yeah, it absolutely does. You know, when you can say, I am first and foremost a doctor and going to do my job and heal people. That's something special. But it is really, I don't know. How many people have had an opportunity to be in that community, but it really is just a beautiful place. You know, beautiful people there. They're so peaceful normally that it's going to take a long time, I think, for people to recover.
Yeah, it's horrible. But let's get back to the election, because at the end of this, the only way I think we begin to heal as a country is to add some accountability to what's going on in Washington and in state houses like in Harrisburg, to where maybe we start coming back to some bit of sanity policy-wise, because, you know, what we've seen, you know, happening is, you know, just massive division and massive, you know, just ripping us apart and not doing the things that, you know, like filling potholes that it should be done. I'm curious what you're telling your members, you know, on why they should be getting out on Tuesday.
Well, you know, I'm fortunate my members are faculty. We tend to vote normally under ordinary circumstances at a higher percentage than most people do. I think our biggest concern really is with our students and trying to get them to understand why it is just so very important for them to get to the polls and to vote about the things that they care for. You know, it's difficult in this point in time to get some messages across given all the noise that comes out of Washington, D.C. But we really have to be focused on things like affordable higher education and make sure that our universities are able to provide, again, an affordable, high-quality education to people, and that the universities get the funding that they need from the Commonwealth so that, you know, working people can actually afford to go to college and not have to mortgage their whole future to do so.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's one of the issues. I've talked with a number of Democratic candidates about the idea that, you know, we need to do something on college tuition because it's harming an entire generation. And I always tell the story of a friend of mine. You know, she went all the way through the University of Michigan, all the way through law school, and at the end of it, walked out without any debt. She worked a minimum wage job. You know, this is back in the late 60s, early 70s. You know, she worked a minimum wage job, had a crummy car, lived in a small one-room apartment, but at the end of it, wasn't saddled with a lifetime of debt. And that's how a generation became, you know, one of the most prosperous generations in our country, because they weren't saddled with this lifetime of debt. And I think those are conversations we need to be having again.
I think we need to have those with legislators. I think many of them went out, but nevertheless, thirds of the cost of their patient and makes Commonwealth, in some cases, less than 25% of the cost, and all the burden falls on the students, and that keeps people from attending university. And we decline our universities of students from the lower tiers of family income universities. But even for those who manage to attend, think about what that does. Economy, when you have young people who should be buying cars, having more income, instead handing all their money over to banks.
Yeah.
It can't be good for anyone.
No, and it's not good for it's not good for them. It's not good for their families, but it's also not good for our society. It's not good for the economy. It's not good for other workers. There's so much to this, but you know who it's really good for? It's good for the bankers. It's good for the investor class, that 1% that's really doing well. And this is kind of that election to me where, you know, I'm hoping that we're seeing and that there's a pushback, especially when you look at the tax heist that they just did last year. That, you know, we were given all these promises. There was going to be the $4,000 Trump prize. There was going to be all of this investment, you know, because we were going to repatriate all that money and unleash the power of corporate investment, only to find out that they hoarded it at the top and bought back shares and increased their share of compensation. And, well, maybe $500 trickled down in a one-time bonus.
Right. One time, $500, and we'll just keep waiting for the trickle to eventually happen. That's not, you know, it just isn't smart about our future. I mean, and I'll tell you something else that really disturbs me is the increasing call I hear from people that say that we need to push people away from going to college into technical careers. And, you know, the argument is not everybody should go to college. But we don't think everybody should go to college either. But what we do think is that everybody who can make the grade and get into a college should have that opportunity to be able to achieve the American dream.
Yeah, look, I'm one of those people who say, you know, in college, I grew up at a time where I was told the only way you were going to be able to survive in the, you know, the 21st century, the only way that you were going to be middle class is if you went to college, that, you know, everything else was bad and work was bad. You know, we were all going to have corner offices and wear white shirts and ties, and it was going to be this utopia. And the reality is not everybody gets the corner office and not everybody makes the six-figure incomes. You still need people who are going to be, you know, electricians and plumbers and carpenters and trash haulers and, you know, truck drivers and all that. And they should make a decent, reasonable living just like everybody else, in my view.
They absolutely should. And there should be opportunities for people to pursue technical careers and get technical training. But you should equally have that opportunity to be able to go to college and become a professional. And I don't think this is unrelated to sort of the Browning of America, that you have more and more people saying that we should close out or make it more expensive or not worry about affordable education at the very time that we're looking at trying to provide opportunities for African-American, Latinos, Latinas.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because I just had a conversation with somebody who told me that, you know, college tuition for Americans isn't out of reach. The reason tuition, and you can go off on this if you want to, but the reason that tuitions have gone so high is that we have so many foreign exchange students coming in and they pay full tuition, and the universities are just taking advantage of their full tuition because they dole out tons of financial aid to everyone at the bottom. And there's no reason that you can't afford to go to college and that whole spiel. I'm curious your thought.
Well, you know, we have to separate private universities from public ones. And when we actually run the numbers and you can graph it out, and it couldn't be clearer that as state appropriation goes down, tuition and costs go up.
Right.
And that is what we have seen happen, that these costs have shot up. And, you know, unless the state's going to meet its commitment to provide affordable higher education, it's going to be the individual students who suffer. And I don't even, that's not even correct, because it's not the individual student. There are societal impacts that impact us all. If we want to bring quality employers to Pennsylvania, we have to be providing the workforce that's capable of doing the jobs. And if we're not going to invest in higher education properly, or it's going to be too expensive, then we're not going to attract those good jobs to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I think the guy who was president before you, Steve Hicks, he used to throw a number at me that said, you know, back in the 1980s when I was going to college, the state picked up something like 2/3 of the cost of tuition and the student picked up 1/3. Now it's completely flipped around. According to him back then, it was like now the student's picking up like 3/4 of it and the state's only picking up 1/4. And just a complete redistribution and a complete, you know, flipping of the coin. Which has caused, you know, I guess, you know, basically what you're saying.
Yeah, no. If you look at it now, it's even less than 75%. I'm sorry, it's even more than 75% that the students are picking up at this point, because many of our universities have moved to a per credit tuition model. It's a little bit complicated, but it means rather than being able to pay one price for 12 to 18 credits, instead they have to pay for every credit, and they're paying more if they go over 12 credits, which in essence amounts to a 25% tuition increase, which nobody talked about as it happened. But that really means that some of these universities are getting to the point where the students are picking up 80%, maybe even 85% of the cost.
It's outrageous. And again, you know, it comes back to who we keep putting into these offices and the schemes they keep dreaming up and the bad ideas that they bring with them. So last question I've got for you, you know, come Tuesday, you know, where are we looking? I mean, you know, I'm hoping people will be marching to the polls. What's the command, I guess?
Well, I mean, I think it's time for people to realize let's not chase promises, but actually look at the policies and look at those things that are actually going to help people, whether it is healthcare issues or affordable higher education. Let's do meaningful things that are going to help people and also provide a check on some of the craziness that's going on right now.
Yeah, we need some accountability and fast. Ken, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the work you guys do, and I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thanks, Rick. It's always a pleasure.
Good stuff. Our good friend Ken Mash, he's the president of AppScuff. If you want to check out their website, appscuff.org, we'll get links out so you can take a look at the work that they do. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.